trombonist Michael Dees, our Live Music Friday guest here this week. He is accompanied by his quartet, Seth Ebersol on tenor sax, Francesca Romero on piano, and Adam Olszewski on the bass. We are excited to have Michael and his ensemble with us here today. The night before last, Michael wrapped up a series of performances at the Hollywood Bowl, and here on Friday, he's back in East Lansing performing for us on Current State. Fantastic to have Michael here. We want to look forward to talking with him and hearing lots more music. This was a tribute to Ray Charles that he performed at the Hollywood Bowl on Wednesday evening. More from Michael Dees and his players coming up here before the hour is through on Live Music Friday here on WKAR's Current State. Well, the whirlwind that is the Donald Trump campaign is about to descend on Lansing. The Republican presidential candidate visits the Summit Sports Complex in Diamonddale today for a 5 p.m. rally. Recent polls suggest a comfortable lead for Democrat Hillary Clinton among Michigan voters. The Trump visit also comes just after the hiring of a new national campaign manager. Many in mid-Michigan wonder what the visit might leave in its wake. The candidate's many bombastic comments and missteps have dominated media coverage of the presidential campaign. Our first guest oversees the Trump campaign here in Michigan. Scott Hagerstrom is a political consultant and lifelong Michigan resident. He's been active with many conservative causes, including Americans for Prosperity and the Coalition Against Higher Taxes, among others. Welcome back, Scott Hagerstrom.
Great. Thanks for having me on. Very much appreciate it.
We're naturally curious what Mr. Trump will talk about today. Do you know?
You know, he's going to continue talking about, you know, the theme of making America great again. And that includes national security, keeping us safe from ISIS and from terrorism, homeland security, keeping us safe here at home. And in addition, economic security, making sure that families, workers have a fair chance in this economy so that when they work hard, they can get ahead, unlike the current system that's rigged against them.
I saw him live last night delivering what was obviously a scripted address, unlike this spontaneous approach that he's become quite famous for. Is it another scripted speech tonight, or is it going to be the more freewheeling, spontaneous thing?
It's going to be freewheeling and spontaneous, and he's spending a lot more time writing his own speeches, putting a lot more thought into them, and I think we see that come through, starting with the Detroit economic speech Monday of last week, and then continuing this week with his speech on Monday in Ohio about fighting terrorism and his immigration plans, and then on Tuesday talking about homeland security and making sure people feel safe, because we do have a crime problem in this country. And then again last night when he did some personal reflection and talked about, gave a more personal side that the public doesn't often see.
It's being reported that the campaign is undergoing a reboot with the hiring of Steve Bannon, the former Breitbart News executive, as the national campaign's new chief. Is it accurate and fair to describe that as a reboot?
No, I think it's an addition. It's bringing more people onto the team, into the room, so he has more diverse opinions. You know, another person.
Not a reboot, though.
Not a reboot at all, just a continuation. And we see Kellyanne Conway come on board, too. National pollster, I've had the pleasure of working with her on several projects over the past few years right here in Michigan. And she's a fantastic person. And this is really just about getting his message out that he's been talking about all the time. But, and you know, we see the opinion pages of the mainstream media are not friendly at all to Mr. Trump. And so working on new ways to make sure we get the message directly to the people. It's not about changing the message, but making sure that message is relayed to the public, and so that they can see the distinct choice that they have behind them, whether they want another third term for Obama, if they want more trade deals like NAFTA and TPP, which cost Michigan hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs, or if they want to move forward. If we keep voting for the same thing, we're going to have the same Washington, D.C. But if we want true change, we need to vote for something different. And I think actions speak louder than words. Donald Trump has a history of building of doing. And Hillary Clinton has a history of doing a lot of talk. You know, no one, when you ask people what has she accomplished, no one can name one thing. She was a U.S. Senator for several years. She was Secretary of State, but yet there's no history of accomplishment there. When she ran for U.S. Senate in New York, she promised 200,000 new jobs in upstate New York. After her first term, not only was there not additional jobs, but there was a net loss of 31,000 jobs. So I think we have a real clear choice and distinction here.
The reporting about Steve Bannon is leading some to believe, many to believe, I would say, to expect a more bare-knuckled approach by Donald Trump between now and November. Do you expect that?
I think we're going to continue to see what we saw this week, a very disciplined candidate, somebody that has humility, somebody that's working hard and puts the American people first, not the interest of big business and the political elite out of Washington, D.C.
It was interesting that yesterday, the day after Mr. Bannon's hire, the campaign also issued an apology for remarks that Mr. Trump has made in the past. So we have this weird combination of signals that I'm trying to decipher here. The campaign, people are reading reports that the campaign's going to be more bare-knuckled. But on the other hand, there was this apology yesterday. Can you help us put this in some kind of perspective here? Is Mr. Trump gonna be less bombastic and less controversial in his remarks, or more, or the same?
You know, Donald Trump's going to be Donald Trump, and I think what you've seen this week is the real Donald Trump. He may bring advisors in, and I think the media is reading a lot into the advisors he's bringing into the mix. But ever since the beginning, when Mr. Trump got into this race, he has been himself. He is in charge of this campaign. And all the pundits said, you know, he won't really run. He won't file his paperwork. He can't win a primary. You know, he dispensed of 16 opponents, very, very capable opponents. And we see right here in Michigan, the pollsters, many polls said that he would lose Michigan or it'd be very close. He blew Ted Cruz away by over 12 points. So we see over and over one set of circumstances being described by the mainstream media. But at the end of the day, it's up to the American people. And up to now, they have chosen Donald Trump. Republicans chose him to be his nominee. And we even see in the polling now, you know, the Detroit News poll showed 44%. They commissioned a poll with 44% Democrats, which is way too high. 44% of Michiganders don't identify as Democrats. But even so, having a rigged poll, Hillary Clinton could still only garner 41% support. So there's still a lot of voters out there for grabs. And Mr. Trump is appealing. He's the right candidate at the right time for the issues that face our country, from the economy, from wages to jobs to ISIS to terrorism to immigration.
Scott Hagerstrom is the Michigan campaign director for the Donald Trump campaign. Mr. Trump, of course, appears in Diamonddale this afternoon for a rally at 5 p.m. Have there been comments made by Mr. Trump that you wished he hadn't made?
You know, you have to take the good with the bad. And, you know, when you're dealing with the media that interprets everything in a very negative light, no matter what it is, and they give the benefit of the doubt anytime Clinton says something, you know.
It's more than the media, though. It's a lot of American people. They've never seen a candidate this inflammatory,
yeah.
Have they?
Yeah, I think when you look and you really look at history, there's been this campaign isn't any different for president than if you go back 200 years. I mean, you have a history of sometimes violent behavior, sometimes very lots of different behaviors over the past 200 years. But the fact is, Donald Trump is someone that cares about the American people. And I think we see that coming through this week. And you're going to continue to see that in him. And, you know, again, actions speak louder than words. We saw Hillary Clinton at the head of the State Department, who squandered trillions of dollars that had been spent in the Middle East with gains and lives lost. We see her email scandal. We see her lying about her emails and the transfer of classified information. You see a pay to play when she was Secretary of State. A mission by Hillary Clinton today that they'll no longer accept donations from foreign countries if she is elected president is an admission that they were on the wrong track and she was doing wrong and doing pay for play when she was Secretary of State. Let's look at Donald Trump. Everyone wants to talk about his words, but let's look at his actions. Because of him, New York turned around. When he first built the Trump Tower back in the 1980s, he was one of the key people to remake the New York skyline and to bring economic prosperity back to New York. Even Rudy Giuliani, the mayor, has made statements like that. So let's look at actions. You know, the media wants to focus on words, but the fact is Hillary Clinton does not have one accomplishment.
Those words are blowing everything else out of the water, though.
Well, if you want a smooth talker, someone that's been a smooth politician but doesn't get anything done. It lies about classified information, squanders the gains in the Middle East, wasting trillions of dollars. You know, if people want a smooth talker and want to pretend that that person can accomplish things when really they've had no accomplishments, then Hillary Clinton's your candidate. If you don't want a third Obama term, if you don't want one of the worst economic recoveries in modern history, if we want to get back to where we have wage growth, job growth, and we're not signing trade agreements that send jobs overseas, again, let's look at actions, not words. And Hillary Clinton's actions, you know, she's a typical flip-flop politician. Her husband signed NAFTA, which cost Michigan hundreds of thousands of jobs. She supports TPP. She's said it over and over. Her supporters, the governor of Virginia, said that she supports and will sign TPP. But yet, somehow, conveniently, a year later, when the second edition of her book comes out, that paragraph where she states she supports TPP is missing. So she just goes with the political winds. And if you elect her, you know, we can't trust her. She has misled. She lies. And so she can lay out the best of plans and say the nicest things. But that's what politicians have been doing to the American people for years. They say the nicest things. They get elected. But once they get in office, they do what they're going to do. And the bottom line, Hillary Clinton will sign TPP. And she's a globalist.
The most recent Michigan poll I could find was released Wednesday. This is a Fox 2 Detroit Mitchell poll, and it showed Donald Trump trailing Hillary Clinton by 10 percentage points here in a two-way race and by 11 percentage points when it includes the Libertarians and the Greens. What do you think needs to happen to close that gap here in Michigan?
Well, what we see in the polls is Hillary can't get over the low to mid-40s. So there's a huge amount of people there. They're up for grabs. And we see a lot of people that are looking at third-party candidates. At the end of the day, they come home and they usually vote for change. They're very open to Donald Trump's message. And, you know, people in Michigan don't really focus on politics. And this is my experience for the past 25 years to post-Labor Day. As they're sending the kids back to school, refocusing on the reality of life and less on summer, they really start to key in on politics. So not concerned at all with the polls. The pollster said Hillary Clinton was going to beat Bernie in the primary by 22 points. And boy, were they wrong. So, you know, that's not a concern at all. We know that there's an audience here in Michigan that's yearning for change, just like the polls last year on Prop 1. Nobody foresaw an 80-20 defeat. The people here in Michigan are paying attention. The pollsters have proven wrong many times here in Michigan over the past year, and we believe that they're going to be proven wrong again. And, you know, that's just a snapshot in time. We're going to see a whole fall campaign. We're going to have debates. We're going to have many surrogates and Mr. Trump coming back to Michigan. And we're competitive here. You know, we don't have to hire 200 people to get the message out in Michigan because we have thousands of volunteers out there hitting doors and making phone calls.
I was going to ask you, that's my next question about your ground operation here. I mean, it's been reported that Hillary Clinton has a much better funded, more extensive ground game.
She has to have a better funded and more extensive ground game because nobody will volunteer for her. She has to hire everyone that goes out there and works for her. We literally have thousands of people out there ready and willing, and they're hitting doors. They're making phone calls. And maybe we're not as good as the Hillary machine of talking about what we're doing because we're out there doing, just like the candidate. He's doing, and that's the message he sends through the campaign, that we have to get out there and hit the doors. We have to make the phone calls and get the message out there. And the media is going to report what they report, but we're taking our message directly to the workers and the families here in Michigan because the system is rigged, and there's a feeling out there that no matter how hard you work, you can't get ahead. And they're right. The system is worked. You know, the people in Michigan can't afford a lobbyist, so they need a voice for them in Washington, D.C., not for the political elites and for the Wall Street elites.
Isn't the way to get the media to stop reporting what it's going to report, as you put it, would be to get the candidate to stop making so many inflammatory remarks?
You know, a lot of his remarks are just misinterpreted by the media, and they take it in the wrong direction. And Hillary, you know, they definitely favor Hillary Clinton. There's a favor there among the mainstream national media in favor of Hillary Clinton, and that's been well documented.
It's but, not
you know,
just despite the media. It's fellow Republicans.
Well,
who are
again,
increasingly supportive of Hillary Clinton, though, too.
No, but these are the elites. This is not about the elites. You know, let's look last year at the example here in Michigan of Prop 1. You had the Republican elites, the Democratic elites, all the opinion pages of all the newspapers in Michigan supported passage of the largest tax increase in 50 years. But at the end of the day, The people of Michigan voted 80-20. No, the elites were the 20%. We're appealing to that 80%. We're appealing to the non-elites, the average working people. And those people are listening and they're studying. And at the end of the day, they're going to choose not more trade deals that have cost Michigan hundreds of thousands of jobs. That's the path of Hillary Clinton.
Have you been a Trump supporter from the beginning, or were you behind another candidate in, before the primary?
No, I've always been a Trump supporter. I know he's the candidate for change. He's the outsider. And, you know, I grew up in Union household here in Michigan. I grew up in Inkster, Michigan, one of the poorest communities here in the state. And so I've seen firsthand the devastation, whether growing up or into today. And we need change. We desperately need change here in the state of Michigan.
You expect him to win in November?
I do expect him to win, yes.
If he were to lose, what kind of Republican Party do you think will take shape after that loss? I'm assuming you consider yourself a Republican here. What kind of shape will the party be in if he were not successful in November?
I am a Republican. I believe Republican Party is the best party to move forward through the economic policies, through limited government, true freedom and liberty. You know, that's a very interesting question, and that's a huge hypothetical. I think that remains to be seen. There are some splits there. I admit that, but again, I think we need to go in the direction of speaking for the American people and for the average worker and average family that's trying to get ahead and is sick and tired of the rigged system that's keeping them from getting ahead that exists in Washington, D.C.
We want to thank Scott Hagerstrom, who is the Michigan campaign director for the Trump for campaign. Trump for President campaign. Again, Mr. Trump visits the Summit Sports Complex in Diamonddale for a 5 p.m. rally. Scott Hagerstrom, thanks for being here.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Michael Dees with a tremendous performance on trombone there. Michael is on the MSU College of Music's Jazz Studies program faculty. He's accompanied here by Seth Ebersol on tenor saxophone, Francesca Romero on piano, and Adam Olszewski on bass. Delighted to have Michael Dees and these other great players here with us today on a Live Music Friday on WKAR. Sounding just fantastic. More music on the way, along with a little bit of conversation with Michael. Well, it was big news last October when the first Chevy Camaro made in Lansing rolled off the production line. For several years, the model's been manufactured in Ontario, and many Americans were thrilled to see the classic American muscle car come home. The Camaro made its debut 50 years ago as the 1967 model. Now, General Motors is celebrating the legacy of its legendary brand with a series of events in Lansing and Detroit. Current State's Kevin Lavery spent some time checking under the hoods in Lansing. Kevin, how many Camaros were here in town yesterday?
Oh, Mark, dozens. I have never seen so many versions of a single car in one place before. Camaro owners cruised the parking lots outside the LGR plant near downtown Lansing in droves yesterday. GM is going all out for this celebration, which of course is perfectly timed to coincide with the Woodward Dream Cruise this weekend in Metro Detroit. I'm really not a car guy, Mark, but the excitement in Lansing was inescapable. In the shadow of the city's landmark triple smokestacks, the massive parking lots of the Lansing Grand River Assembly Plant flex in a sea of muscle cars. From Flint to Florida to Fresno, Camaro buffs have come to celebrate 50 years of one of Chevy's most successful brands. Ed Wolfert is one of them. He's motored down from Mount Pleasant in his red 68.
You can't see this on the radio, but maybe you can describe it. That's the original engine, Chevy 327, and the original two-speed power glide.
You could eat out of this engine block. This is clean.
It is. It's too clean. But it gives me something to do on the weekends.
How much effort and time and money, and really more importantly, Ed, love, goes into making this car just about mint condition?
A lot. But fortunately, I'm an accountant and I can hire competent mechanics. Sometimes I get away with a thing or two, but mostly it's done professionally.
What is it about the Camaro that just inflames your passion for automobiles?
The look, I guess. My buddy had this car, and I got it out of him after a couple of years, but it just grabbed me when I saw it. I had to have it, and I got lucky enough to get it.
In the summer of 1966, rumors were flying about the new hot rod General Motors was developing under wraps. The Chevy line was hard at work building a worthy competitor to a sporty little pony car that was turning a lot of heads on American roads.
I bought you a brand new Mustang, a 1965. Hallelujah, hallelujah, ride my Chevrolet.
Internally, the car was codenamed Panther. When General Motors called a press conference that June to announce the new brand, reporters were invited to the CEPAW meeting. That stood for the Society for the Eradication of Panthers from the Automotive World. When the real name was unveiled, the myth of the Panther faded away, and the legend of the Camaro was born.
I'm Donner Creeksby.
You had a 79 Camaro.
I bought a 79 Rally Sport with a 305, and it had the automatic in it. And I really liked that car. I mean, it was just a game changer. To be 19 years old and have a brand new 79 in 79, I was the coolest thing in the universe. And then, of course, I did the Navy thing, and that was the sale of that car because I was sailing for 4 years. And I never got back. I just could never get back to a Camaro. And then when I test drove one of the 15 rental cars, they had a ragtop, and it was an upgrade. I grabbed that thing, I drove it around, I put 350 miles on it, I think, in 2 days. I'm like, I need one of these. So that's where we're waiting. You know, when the 16 came out, then they started making rumors of the 50th anniversary. So I'm like, oh, I'll have to wait. And I was so heart-pressed. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I was on eBay and nearly pulled the trigger because you could get one, but I'm so glad I waited. And then to see this thing in person, I bought it blind. I never seen one, you know.
Well, if I were you and if I had just ordered a 2017 Special Edition Camaro, I'd be sitting in one too before I got mine.
That's exactly what I did. Get my friend to take my picture of it. So this is going on Facebook, you know.
Pat Lewis.
And you're from where?
Ionia, Michigan.
This is a 2002 Police Edition Camaro. I have the urge to either eat some donuts or do some donuts in this car.
Very good, very good. Eat some donuts. This is a retired Utah Highway Patrol car. This one in particular was used specifically just for PR. It is outfitted differently than most of the patrol cars. You can see all of the extra lights and things like that, antennas. Everything's all laid out for display. We travel around and get people in the car, get the kids in the car, put smiles on faces. It's a PR tool.
Pat, I assume that you yourself were in law enforcement?
I just do volunteer work with law enforcement. I've been doing that for a number of years, and they got the chance to know who I am, so I got permission to own these vehicles. The vehicles, I actually have written permission from the different states to own them because they are fully working.
In your travels, talking with Colorado or Utah patrolmen, any good stories of chasing down the bad guys and they didn't expect to be caught?
Lots of good stories, lots of good stories. Just going down the road with these, you get a lot of people's attention. You see, I followed a 2002 today and just watching brake lights. Just, whoop! What in the world is that? That can't be a Camaro. A lot of fun. It's interesting. Meet a lot of interesting people.
No disrespect to the Ford Motor Company, but this is not a Crown Vic.
No. We eat Crown Vics for lunch. I'm sorry. And if you notice, we cleaned all of the bugs off. We call them Mustang crumbs off the front of it. I shouldn't say that. That's not politically correct.
Today is the day to say that.
Yes, we can get away with something like that today.
The first Camaros went on sale to the public in September of 1966, and it seems General Motors is getting a jump on the 50th anniversary a month early. All of this is time to celebrate the Camaro this weekend for the Woodward Dream Cruise in Detroit.
Al Oppenheiser, Camaro Chief Engineer.
So you oversee, as the title implies, engineering for the entire Camaro line at General Motors.
Well, everything. It's everything. Design, manufacturing, engineering. The team is led by the Chief Engineer, although it's engineering in the title, but you're kind of like the head of the program.
Tell me how this car, a classic muscle car, has changed in terms of its performance and horsepower over the years.
Well, it's changed quite dramatically with the technology and the lightweight materials and so on. For instance, our entry-level engine, the 2-liter turbo, does 0 to 60 in 5.4 seconds. And you got to go back to like a 1970 Chevelle 396 big block. That did 0 to 60 in 5.4 seconds. So we're able to get maximum performance for a four-cylinder engine. And then, of course, our top of the other end is 650 horsepower, and people are telling us they're 26 miles to the gallon. So we're using technology to get the performance numbers to continue to grow.
Right. I mean, obviously the era of the gas guzzling muscle car is long gone, but people still want the ferocity of the old Camaro, so you have to do some sort of a hybrid blend.
Absolutely. So again, with technology and our engines these days, like variable valve timing, active fuel management, we can use that to our advantage. So if we're meeting our fuel economy targets, the sky's the limit on horsepower.
Is there a common thread, Al, that runs through the Camaro line, a guiding principle each time a generation comes out where GM says, we must adhere to this core in order for us to call it a Camaro?
Absolutely. Every Camaro, all six generations, have had a common theme. There's a really long hood, strong rear shoulders, great wheels and tires, and it's basically something that the customer loves to personalize. They make it their own. It's not a car that you need, it's a car that you want. And then we've carried that through all six generations.
Do you personally own one?
I own two. I have a 1968 Camaro convertible that I did a complete ground-up restoration on. And I bought a 2014 Camaro Z28 that was probably the most awesome car I ever drove, let alone got to work on.
Do you have to pinch yourself sometimes when you stop and realize that you're the chief engineer for General Motors Camaro line?
I do. It's very humbling. The chief engineer job is an aspiration when you come to an automotive manufacturer like General Motors. So to be a chief, we don't have a lot of them, is one thing. To be a chief of the car that you grew up loving. My first car was a 70 and a half Camaro. So to end up being the chief of the Camaro and understand what it does to people. I pinch myself because I'm a Camaro fan myself, and I sometimes get confused in what I do in my day job.
You have lived the American dream.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I hope to live it a long time, too.
Okay, just one more thing left to do now to finish out this story about Camaros. And I have to enlist the help of my good friend here at WKAR, current sports host Al Martin, proud owner of a cherry red 2012 Camaro. Al, let's ride off into the sunset.
Let's do it, man. 215, you ready?
Close enough. Let's do it.
All right, let's go.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
And it's a Live Music Friday here on WKAR's Current State. Our guest artist today, trombonist Michael Dees, who is a member of the MSU College of Music's Jazz Studies program. The night before last, Michael was performing at the Hollywood Bowl in a tribute to Ray Charles. We'll learn a little bit more about that experience and his experience recording with Paul Simon and Christian McBride, Alicia Keys, and others. Right now, let's hear Michael and his ensemble perform Brooklyn.
Thank you.
Fabulous. It's called Brooklyn. Michael Dees on trombone, Seth Ebersol on tenor saxophone, Francesco Romero on piano, and Adam Olszewski on the bass. Michael Dees is a member of the MSU College of Music's Jazz Studies faculty. He has played extensively with the Christian McBride Big Band and with stars like Paul Simon and Alicia Keys. And the night before last, he was at the Hollywood Bowl. And so we've got a few things we'd like to talk about before we let these great players go at it here again. Michael, great to meet you.
Hey, and great to meet you too.
Glad you're here. Talk to us a little bit about your musical journey here. I know you grew up in Georgia playing sax and trumpet, not trombone.
Yeah, I played recorder when I was in third grade.
Okay, that's where we all start out, right?
And my father liked to listen to a bunch of doo-wop records. So I heard tenor saxophone solos in all the music of the early and mid to late 50s. So like songs like Tequila and
The Champs.
The Champs, exactly.
Yeah, I grew up hearing that.
Yeah, so I heard all that stuff. And then my mother liked soul and Motown. So I heard that side of it too. And I was just immersed in the blues and R&B and the soul sound of the South. And then James Brown is from Augusta, Georgia, as well. So I heard a lot of that music growing up. Sort of natural for me to go towards the tenor saxophone, alto saxophone type thing. So I started playing that in sixth grade.
And but you ended up much more deeply into jazz.
Mm-hmm. My mom bought me a CD. CDs had just come out then. And
you are young.
and there was a compilation CD of had great jazz saxophone solos. So I got it, and I was like, this is different and it's really exciting. I don't know why. So I started getting way into straight ahead jazz.
Charlie Parker. I mean, what? Drop some names.
Charlie Parker, Don Byas, Coleman Hawkins, Dexter Gordon.
Oh yeah.
John Coltrane, Sonny Rollins.
You have a busy agenda you're on the jazz faculty here at MSU, but I know you have a busy agenda as a performer and as a recording performer and recording as well, which all sounds so rich. I mean, is it hard to juggle all this activity?
It is hard, and it was harder. I'm one of the luckiest people in the world. My wife is amazing and has taught me how to organize myself a lot better. So she got me using the Google Calendar and she's taught me how to sleep, you know, like set a bedtime so I can make sure and have enough energy for all this stuff.
Okay.
It's pretty busy. Okay. Yeah.
This week, just the night before last, you played at the Hollywood Bowl. What was going on there?
They were doing the Christian McBride Big Band has really taken off in the past 5 or 6 years. We played at the White House in February. We did Obama's last musical concert at the White House, and it was a tribute to Ray Charles. So we had a fantastic time there meeting President Obama and the First Lady. And then we also took that exact show to the Hollywood Bowl for another tribute to Ray Charles.
So it was the same, similar program. Same program.
Yep.
Wow.
And then we had the great lead singer for Earth, Wind, and Fire, Philip Bailey, singing Sun Goddess and Africano Power and Here's to Life. It was amazing.
What was that like?
He actually got me through my childhood, Philip Bailey, because when I was 15 and 16 trying to figure out life and get out of Georgia, like I was listening to Live in Japan, Earth, Wind, and Fire every day, all day long.
Maceo Parker was on the bill as well, who's a legendary sax player with James Brown.
Oh, yeah.
What was it like to share the stage with him?
Well, I've been really fortunate to have had, you know, a few different times to get to play with Mr. Parker. He's a legend. Just being around him, you know, lifts everybody up and lets you reach musical heights that you couldn't do by yourself.
What a week. Hollywood Bowl, now Current States Live Music Friday.
Yeah, I'm so glad
to
be back.
There is nowhere to go but down from here, Michael.
Well, I've got my students are just burning, so I'm really, really happy to have them here.
Talk to us about the players who you're with here today.
Yeah, I've known these cats for the past few years, especially Adam and Frenchie. I met them as freshmen. I even met Frenchie, which is short for Francesca. She's from Miami, and I met her at her high school and spoke to her some about the program. She's just doing fantastic things here. She's already had a number of successful performances in the Michigan area. Adam is from Ann Arbor.
Is it Michigan High School? Francesca's from?
No, she's from Miami.
Miami. I beg your pardon.
Yep,
you said
yep.
That.
New okay. World School of the Arts. Is that right? And they've got a really great director there, Jim Gazier, who just churns them out. And Francesca is no exception. So Adam is from Ann Arbor, and I've known him for a couple years. He recently did a record date with me in New York for tenor saxophonist Jason Hainsworth, comes out on the Seattle-based Origin imprint. And then Seth is from Pennsylvania, and just sounds fantastic. He's starting the second year of his master's program here, studying with Professor Rivera.
We will let you get back to doing your music here right after I ask you about your work with Paul Simon and Alicia Keys. Mm-hmm. This goes back a few years.
Yes.
But talk to us about that project.
Sure. I got a call to play the benefit for Katrina that was held in New York City right after Hurricane Katrina hit. It was sort of an all-star show of headlining acts. Nine Inch Nails was there, I remember. Alicia Keys. Oprah was an MC. Paul Simon was there, and I was called to play with Paul Simon's band. We played one of his great songs, Back to the Bayou, or Down Home in the Bayou, and I got to play sousaphone, which is, you know, like the marching tuba in a brass band ensemble.
You play them all. Holy cow.
I play a few instruments,
yeah. I guess so. And that is on a DVD that people can actually
see. Yeah, live DVD, Hurricane Katrina, Red Cross benefit, and you can see me there in the flesh playing a giant tuba. Paul Simon was incredibly gracious. Great guy.
Well, you know what I'd like to do here, and I'm going to call an audible here just a little bit, just so we can hear more of you guys play. I'll let you, Michael Dees, make your way back to your seat, because you had to move here in order to conduct the interview here. I want to remind our listeners that on Monday, CATA's Bob Swanson joins me. He is a supporter of the Bus Rapid Transit Plan, which has stirred up a lot of disagreement in Meridian Township in particular. Bob will be joined by another proponent of the Bus Rapid Transit Plan, and we will be asking them about it and why they are supporters of it. Also, the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency is working with employers and other organizations, including some that often compete with each other, to help veterans find jobs. We'll learn more about the talent attraction team Monday here on Current State. Again, a big thanks to Michael Dees and all these great players, Seth Ebersol, Francesca Romero, and Adam Olszewski on the bass. They're going to play us out here, hopefully for a bunch more minutes. What are we going to hear?
This is the title track from my new record, Father Figure.
Father Figure. It's Michael Dees and friends here on Current State's Live Music Friday.